right, race fans.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right, race fans, y'all know what time it is. It's Race Chat Live on this Thursday night. My goodness gracious, what a week that has already been. The Roval Bowl, we've got Dover to talk about. Of course, Craig Moore will be joining me. Looking forward to talking racing here tonight on Race Chat Live. Big announcement, guys. And that's called a tease, okay? So we'll see if Craig Moore's on the other line. Craig, are you there? Well, we're still waiting on them to be plugged in. Look, while we're waiting on Craig to get plugged in, I would like to make an announcement. Race Know How sent us a heads up. They've got a new way to subscribe to their channel, a new way to pay for the subscription. They're now taking outside payments from not just PayPal. So beforehand, it was PayPal that you had to order a subscription to Race Know How by, but not anymore. They've got it to where they can accept other forms of payment for RaceKnowHow.com. Our friend Jonathan Masters gave me a heads up, and I told him I would spread the word. And so we'll get that out there for you listeners to check it out. RaceKnowHow.com. If you don't know what it is, you missed Jonathan Masters on a few weeks ago. That's a great, if you're a dirt track specialist, racer, or involved in the dirt racing community, check out Race Know How. I'm telling you guys, Master built chassis. Tater Masters is on there giving a lot of know how. Of course, they've got a big thing coming up. I don't want to spread the word here. I'll let Jonathan make that announcement, but they've got a big place that they're going to in the next week or so to do some filming up there. But if you haven't checked out their videos on the Facebook page, guys, it is awesome. They show you how to scale your car. They just simple things about your race car that you don't necessarily have to take to a specialist. You can do it right there at home or in your shop, and they make it a lot easier. It's kind of like the YouTube movement, you know, where you just check out YouTube to figure out something. Well, these guys have gone a little bit more in-depth than that, and that's why they're charging a subscription. But if you'll check it out on their Facebook page, they have a lot of free content there. It's addicting and makes you want to go check out what's there at the website just for a small subscription fee every month. So I think that I hear somebody in the background there. Craig Moore, did you show up?
I've been here since 7:58.
Oh, my goodness. So you were listening to us watch Wheel of Fortune there before the beginning of the show. Unfortunately,
yeah,
we weren't able to solve the bonus round.
I was going to say,
he needed a couple of more letters. It was biking to work, R-S-T-L-N-E, or is already there. So we knew that it wasn't riding to work. But just there wasn't just wasn't enough letters there. I tell you what, guys, y'all can laugh at me if you want to, but I'm a simple kind of person. I live in Mississippi. People can, you know, they can joke about us and tell us we're uneducated. And sometimes when I read what I write, I'm like, I can't believe that that my writing is that bad. But what I'm thinking in my mind is the right way, but by the time I try to put it to paper, I make a fool of myself, but I'm telling you that every night, my wife and I, we sit down Monday through Friday, or try to every night, and watch Wheel of Fortune together. It's America's game show, and
it's a learning experience for you.
You know, not just that, Craig Moore. It's something that's been in my life since I was a kid. As long as I can remember, I would walk into the living room at 6:30 and either my grandparents or my parents, they were watching Wheel of Fortune. You know, it's something carried on. And so many times these days, Craig Moore, people don't just sit down and enjoy family entertainment. And where can you go wrong with a game show called Wheel of Fortune? You know, we don't get into Jeopardy and all the other game shows, Price is Right. I'm sure they're all great. But it is just something special about sitting down, watching the 6 o'clock news, and then watching the 6:30 or 7:30 would be your time, Wheel of Fortune. But you know, that's taken up enough minutes talking about that. We've got a lot to talk about tonight, Craig Moore. Glad to have you on. I left them with a tease, Craig. I didn't tell everybody what we were doing.
We're not telling them until later.
No. We've already made the announcement, so we don't need to we don't need to carry them too far because we need people to know that there's going to be some changes around here. There's going to be some changes around here, right, Craig? You're moving to Canada.
Yeah, I'm moving to Canada because I want to be closer to my peoples, yo. No. Monday night, we move Race Chat Live. In fact, this will be our last Thursday night episode, and then we go to Monday night to keep you up to date on everything happening in the world of NASCAR from the races on Sunday. We're going to talk at you Monday nights instead of Thursdays, so that will be super, super cool. And then we have more time to speculate on the upcoming races.
And we can also be more involved in reviewing the races beforehand. It is, you know, Craig, you and I talked about this. It's so hard to predict a race. But when you come out of a race like the Roval, there is so much to talk about. And I'm so on fire on a Monday night. I really think it's going to be a prime time spot for our show to grow. Now, we're only doing this for the remainder of the season. We've yet to make – we're doing a, what we would call a trial. And if we have good numbers, Craig Moore, I could foresee us staying on Monday night. But if we have to come back to Thursday night because of our numbers, well, you know, that's what it's all about. So we want to keep our people entertained. We want to make sure we're not talking on top of somebody else like I do Craig Moore all the time. But,
listen, I got a question.
Uh-oh.
I got a question. There's not going to be special counsel or anything like that. We're not going to have to go up against the Senate Judiciary Committee or anything like that.
Ooh, yeah, the Kavanaugh. Oh, my goodness gracious. Bringing politics to work,
all right,
huh?
So we all know it. At 47 years old, sometimes it takes a lot of things to get somebody excited. Like just getting out of bed in the morning is a chore. But I'm going to tell you what. I got home Saturday evening after a DJ gig and for a young lady that turned 16, and I watched her Roval race. The Xfinity race at the Roval. I was on the edge of the couch. So now I'm anticipating Sunday's race.
Right.
And I'm doing a graduation party for a young man that graduated from welding school, and his mama threw him a party. And we were all talking on the message thread. And I said, well, don't post who wins. I'm going to go home and watch the race. Well, I'm going to tell you what. Saturday and Sunday was, I think, the best damn racing I have seen all season long.
Craig Moore, was it the carnage? Was it the carnage or was it the fact that you knew your boy was up on the wheel? And this was a man's race.
Yeah, by
and
the way,
no sexual description here. And I'm not saying that it can't be a woman's race too, but these were the wheelman's race here. This was I'm up on the wheel, and with the ending just showed somebody who was up on the wheel, and they made their way into the chase in a car that should not have even been allowed to get back on the racetrack. Go ahead, Craig Moore.
No, I agree with you. Ryan Blaney, he drove a heck of a race. And what I think was cool about that was, first off, I want to say I think that our bet was that if Bowman made the race, you sent me a Roll Tide 2X shirt. And if I lost and Jimmy made it in, I would send you a More 2 Music pop socket for your telephone. So I'll send you my address after the show.
Oh, whoa. Okay, we'll have to talk about this after the show because I thought it was if they won. Now you're talking about if they make it in. So I owe you an Alabama 2X t-shirt. But I have no problem dressing you in some Roll Tide. We'll just consider it an early Christmas. How about that?
Yes, sir, and I'll send you out a pop socket. I'll send you out two of them, one for you and one
for
the
seven. Do you want 18 championships or do you want last year's 17 championships? Which t-shirt would you like the most?
We can wait until this year.
Have you seen the scores by Alabama the last four games?
I have.
Only scored under 50 points one time. The most that a defense has scored on Alabama is 14 points in four games. It's unbelievable. Alabama's having a great year. We will be glad to dress you up in some Roll Tide. Roll. But
yeah,
we don't
buddy,
like talking about football during race time, Craig Moore.
Has he played anybody this year, though?
Anybody? Jason, thanks for showing up.
I've been here the whole time. I've been listening to y'all.
All right, good.
Okay,
right,
so wait a minute. Hold on, Craig Moore. No. Hold on, because somebody had to come in and speak, and we didn't even know they were there. He peeped into the room, and I guess I didn't see him. Welcome aboard, Mr. CJ Sports. Okay, so people know who the voice is. That's Mr. CJ Sports. Now, Mr. CJ Sports, I've got one thing now that you're on the radio, and I've made Craig mad at me, and I'm over here stuttering. But when you said it's not going to be how we fantasize, and I said you don't do that to Mr. Flag of Caution on the radio because I'm already fantasizing. I mean, Mr. CJ Sports, it was everything I dreamed it to be.
It was. Yeah, that was my biggest concern with this thing is we all had this idea of what it was going to be like in our head, and that was my biggest fear is whether or not it was going to live up to it, and I think they did a great job of living up to it. My only concern is then I seen 8,000 posts of them trying to turn every track into a Roval.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a little bit.
I don't think that you need it.
Let's
just
save
like
that for later.
If there's something there, leave it there. Don't. But I'll let you guys discuss that later on.
Yeah, let's all chime in on that later. Because
are you
Chris,
telling the captain
like
to sit the hell
girl.
Down? I mean, just let me grab a hold of this real quick because we do have 45 minutes left of good time. But I want to ask you a question, Craig Moore. Are you like Kyle Petty over there Wednesday night on the Dale Show, where you're just slapping the cards on the table, telling everybody, hush, you've got a point to make? Go ahead, Craig Moore. Please, have the floor.
Well, everybody knows that I love everybody and respect everybody here at the 110, but holy criminies. Listen, I agree with you, CJ. Not every track needs to be a Roval, and we'll talk about that closer to the top of the hour, so fans, you're going to want to stay tuned for that. Because Chris says they should be. Chris said we should have one or two in there, and I told him he needed to sit down and shut up. But, no, I think Saturday's race was great. I think Sunday's race was even better. I will say that Martin Truex now belongs at Joe Gibbs Racing because he showed what a panty-waist two-bit little girl he can be by putting knocking around Jimmy Johnson. I just think that was a coward. I think that was a bitch-ass move. And it showed that he belongs. It's Joe Gibbs Racing. Him and Kyle
he needs to be in the same shop as Kyle Busch. Is that what you're saying, Craig Moore? I'll shut up now.
Yeah, about time. Sit down. I just think that what he did to Jimmy Johnson after the race was totally uncalled for.
Disrespectful.
That is very disrespectful. He's a one-time champion. He's won multiple times this year.
Yes.
There was no need for him to spin him out after the race. Jimmy, and you know what? I said this too, and then I thought about it, and I listened to Chad Knauss last night, who needs to get a new blazer, because that one sucks that he wears. It's terrible. Yeah, I'm in a mood tonight.
Yeah, we are opinionated on the show.
Yeah, we are. The views and opinions expressed on Race Chat Live are that of the host and the host only. I agree that Jimmy had to do what he had to do to get the win. He is an 85-plus race winner. He's on a 51 race losing streak. He was going for the win. He said that if he had to do it all over again, he'd add front brake bias, but he wouldn't change anything. He would have still went for the win. So he spun out Martin. Big deal. Wah.
It was a race for the win. I mean,
exactly,
dude. If that had been Ryan Blaney that hit him, I could understand every word that come out of Truex's mouth. But we're not talking about somebody who just looked up and was up there. Yeah, maybe so. Maybe he looked up and was there this time. But let me tell you something. That's a seven-time champion, 83 wins, seven-time champion, may I say again. It was not intentional to take Truex out. As a matter of fact, I believe what created the accident was Jimmy trying to race him clean. I said enough.
Wow, you're done already?
Yeah, I'm going to let you speak tonight, honey.
Holy cow. Did somebody take your bippy away? Because, like, you're awfully quiet tonight.
Yeah.
Where's that when you need them? Well, listen, it comes down, and I don't want to harp on this. I don't want to spend the next 45 minutes on it. Mr. CJ Sports is going to join us in about 5-6 minutes. I believe he had to go use the little girl's room.
You are on fire tonight. Who
I
are
am,
you?
Man, I am
come weird. On.
I'm aggravated. I'm upset.
All right. Come on.
I just think that the race, everybody was complaining. Now, I will say I want to give kudos to NASCAR and IMS and Mr. What is his name there? Marcus Smith. Somebody had brains enough to move that tire barrier back coming off of 17. And thank God that tire barrier took out enough people in practice and in qualifying, and it probably destroyed $5 million worth of race cars.
Right.
Not the worst being the man who couldn't drive that track to save his life.
Bubba Wallace.
That poor guy. He's supposed to drive it like he stole it, and he drive it like he just wanted to keep wrecking it. He just could not keep it on the track.
I think RPM maybe went through 3 race cars that weekend, Craig Moore. Definitely a hell of a bill for a low-budget team.
And, you know, you feel bad for them. So I'm glad that NASCAR, because that would have been treacherous. Now, let's talk. I'm going to let you speak on the rules package. The new rules package for 2019. Let's talk about the follow the leader crash with 6 laps to go.
Yeah, how interesting that was. And Craig Moore, this is a subject that we see a lot at Talladega. And I know that you think Talladega, well, that's one track, this is another. The reason why I compare the two is because at Talladega, you're so close to somebody's back bumper, you can't see in front of you. And on these restarts at a road course, typically on an oval track, you got a good enough acceleration point, and then you start casting yourself towards the curve. This road course didn't offer that, Craig Moore. Basically, right after the flag stand, you have to get in hard and basically make a Martinsville turn. They're right off the oval, and so I don't know if it was oil on the racetrack or Keselowski old tires or what happened, but basically an accordion effect happened there, Craig, on that restart. Keselowski was on the outside, and they went into the corner there to come off the oval, and he couldn't get stopped in time. I think about 4, maybe 5 race cars total were totaled. Their night was over. And, you know, it's coming down to the end of the race, and this is where Larson received a lot of his damage. And, we just didn't think that the car was capable of getting back out there on the racetrack. They took advantage of a rule where NASCAR will give you 3 laps to get up to speed, and they were on their 2nd lap with 2 laps to go. So, you know, NASCAR will definitely have to look into that. And I feel like Larson bought his way into the championship, the round of 12. But we'll save that for another story.
Yeah, no, I think that that first turn going in there, and they talked about it all week, drivers included. Turns 1, 2, and 3 at the Roval were going to be a disaster on restarts and in the initial start of the race, because everybody was going to be 2x2, and you're going into that first turn coming off of the traditional third and fourth turn at Charlotte for the restarts. So you're already up to max speed, and it's a blind corner. So what I'm thinking is it was a combination of things. Keselowski was on old tires. That's a proven fact. I think maybe he was drinking some Miller Lite at the time, and he missed his braking point.
Yeah, I don't think
realized
had anything to do with it.
I don't either, but I'm just being a wise guy. He missed his breaking point, is I think is what it was.
Right.
When he realized it, he stabbed the brakes, and the car would not turn. So
right.
He hit the tire barrier. And, of course, like you said, they're all on each other's bumpers. They couldn't see over, and it was accordion effect. Kyle Larson was involved. Eventual winner Ryan Blaney was involved. And
Paul Menard,
I mean,
suffered major damage, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that definitely. But again, Keselowski was into the second round safely. So there was no need for. I mean, okay, everybody wants to be the first. There's only going to be one inaugural Rover winner. Just like everybody wanted to be the first in 1994 when Jeff Gordon won the
Brickyard
400. So I get it, but why risk it?
Well, it went from the Brickyard 400 to the Junkyard 400.
Uh-huh.
There was a lot of wrecked race cars. We could call it the Junkyard 400 for the Roval, but they didn't go that many laps. Or that many miles, but you know, Craig, it's simple. This was a track; it was new to everybody. I do not believe next year we will get the same excitement. I believe that next year it will, you know, guys will have a whole year to figure out how to race better there. And I'm not saying that it'll lose its pristine, and I'm not saying that people won't be excited about it. But it's similar to the way the trucks were at Eldora, Craig Moore. You know, the trucks, the very first year, there was people slipping and sliding, and you just, you know, anything was going to happen. But by the second year, buddy, there were some drivers that figured out how to race on dirt, and we got a lot different, a lot better show, I believe, out of the second Eldora race than the first one. But all in all, Craig Moore, for Ryan Blaney to pull out the hat trick and win, you know, I give it to him, man. He was third, and then he wound up first. And Truex, man, I tell you what, I'm not a Jimmy Johnson fan. I will tell you, I was pulling for Jimmy at the end because I have no reason to lie about it. It was a bet, and I said, wow, he's gonna win. He's really gonna do this. It didn't work out, but for Truex to wreck him and then talk smack about him, you know, he wrecked, obviously. Truex ran into the back of Jimmy Johnson at the end of the race, spun him around, and then talked crap about him on national TV. I would say, Martin Truex, I would be watching your rear bumper, buddy.
I agree with you 150%. As I said in my opening monologue, that was totally uncalled for Martin Truex to do that. And then to talk smack. The guy was doing what anybody else would have done. You know what? All right. Maybe he went in a little too hot. Maybe Martin's to blame for that. Maybe he woed up for 16 a little more than he did the previous two laps. Think about that. Well, there's no in-car camera for that.
Right.
Could he have woed up just a little bit? A little bit more than he did on the previous two laps. So Jimmy was expecting him to go the same speed. He didn't. He took his foot off the gas just a little bit, slowed him down about 3 miles an hour. Jimmy said, oh, crap, I was going to go on the inside or outside of him, and he went wide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's playing head games, man. That's racing. I mean, I don't understand why at the end it wasn't just good, hard racing, and I hate we missed it, you know. We'll try again next year. So, Truex's got he's got a good friend coming along. I know that he's figuring that his time's up anyway, because when he's at the house that Kyle Busch built, he'll just be a third name on a door. So,
and he'll be out there within 2 years.
Oh, yeah. Joe Gibbs will make sure that he keeps Bass Pro Shops and all that, and send Martin Truex home back to wherever he come from. And yeah, I don't think that experiment's going to last very long, Craig Moore. But now, you know, also Alex Bowman, what a show that he put on. Let's talk a little bit about Alex Bowman, Craig Moore.
Well, as I said last week, nobody expected him to be in the chase, period, just based on, not on his talent, but based on the car from previous years. In the last 4 or 5 years, that 88 has not been a stellar car in the Hendrick stable. Let's face it. You and I are both Dale Jr. fans. And Dale Jr. in the last couple of years was not running Dale Jr. style. And I'm sure Jason is listening and he's laughing. And I'll admit it, being a Jr. fan, I was not impressed. And you're probably going to give me another hater award, but that's not what I'm getting at. We know that that car was not up to snuff the last 4 or 5 seasons. So Bowman getting in it, yes, it's fresh blood. But nobody expected him to do that well. As I said last week, and I don't have the notes from last week, but in the first 6 races, he had solid top 10s and top 20s, first 5 races. It was only in the 6th race that he finished 31st, I believe. So consistent finishes got him to the first round. Now, you and I both said we didn't expect him to make it. It was our dark horse to get to the second round. Those drivers, when they get in the car, the only thing they have to do? Go fast, turn left. Those crew chiefs, I was waiting for a comment, those crew chiefs were on those calculators calculating who was in, who was out, who was in, who was out, where they were. Chad Canal said at one point they were 26 points to the good. 26 points. And then a lap later, it changed to 12.
Yeah.
And then it went
that's,
to 8.
Yeah, that's pit stops.
Yeah. And he says, you know, he goes, it was a mathematical nightmare for crew chiefs on the box. He says, and yes, Jimmy was in safe, but he wanted the win. Same thing, Alex Bowman. He knew where he had to be. One other driver, I forget who it was, knew where he had to be, and he drove up to the field to make sure he was there.
Oh, Bowman and Boyer both, they had to finish in front of, you know, 12 out of the 16 players in the chase, drivers in the chase. And for Bowman to finish fourth, he got in by the hair of his teeth, but he got in.
Yep.
And that means that he kept cool. This kid, I really, you know, we watched him step in through Junior when Junior stepped out of the race car, and he had some, you know, great runs near about one Phoenix a couple of years ago. If I could make a prediction or something that I think I've watched him enough to know, this kid handles good under pressure, Craig Moore. And knowing the pressure that these guys are under, and this kid excels in those types of situations, we could possibly have – Alex Bowman could possibly be another Jimmy Johnson, brother, somebody who just come out from left field and, you know, in a couple of years we'll be like, well, anybody who doubted this kid, they were messed up. They were wrong. I think Bowman's got the A potential.
I do, too, and I think that Hendrick was right to scoop him up so that he didn't get lost in a in the JGR juggernaut over there, and as well as in the Stuart Haas juggernaut. Let's talk about Richard Childress real quick.
Hold on, one more time about Alex Bowman, and I'll make this prediction now. Hendrick, a long time ago, went out and he grabbed a driver that had showed promise but was raw. And when I say raw, I'm talking Hollywood raw. I'm talking Tim Richmond, okay? Tim had an unbelievable amount of talent behind a race car. Tim just didn't understand how to explain it. Tim was a natural driver. And had he lived, he would have been, you know, to add Tim Richmond to the name of Davey Allison and Alan Quickie and and Bill Elliott and all. I'm not sure Dale Sr. would have had seven championships if Tim Richmond hadn't died so young. I see a lot of Tim Richmond and Alex Bowman. I'm going to tell you one reason why. Tim Richmond didn't care who drove that car before, who was driving at the same company as he was. Tim Richmond was Tim Richmond. He was his own man. Alex Bowman, my biggest fear when he stepped into Dale Jr. was he thought that he would have to please Junior Nation, not Bowman. Bowman says he's not worried about that. Bowman says he's going to have his own fans. To me, that's the confidence you need to be a Cup champion. I see it in Alex Bowman. I'm making a prediction now. We can put it on the archives, but I compared him to Tim Richmond. Alex Bowman has a bright future in NASCAR. Go ahead, Craig. We wanted to talk about the rules, too, so we'll get to that.
Yeah, and I'm going to let you cover that because you've looked at it more in depth than I have. I've been preoccupied. I'm just getting over bronchitis, and friends of mine, their daughter was missing in the South. But that's in the story for another day. I agree with you. I think that Hendrick saw potential, like you said. He was a raw dog. He could groom him the way he wanted. And he wasn't, and I'm glad that Bowman came in and wasn't worried about pleasing us, as in us in Junior Nation. He was out to make his own name in the 88. And I think, and I know CJ's listening, so anytime you want to pipe in your two cents, that would be okay. I think that Bowman figured out, hey, this is my ride. I'm going to make it mine. And I didn't hear
Similar to Jimmy Johnson, Craig Moore. Jimmy Johnson, 2001, 2002, when he stepped into the Cup Series. He wasn't worried that he was running out of the same house as Jeff Gordon. Go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. He wanted to make his own mark. And I think that was important. And now you look back and you go, it must have been Dale Jr. It must have been he lost the edge. Because Alex is in this car now. And the car is running solid. So, and I don't want it to sound, because I am a huge Dale Jr. fan, but it does make you wonder, did the repeated accidents and things like that play a toll on his psyche?
Of course it did. And Greg Ives, the new crew chief, of course, he had an outstanding year in 2015 with Stevie Letard. 2016 was a hard year for Junior. He was having to adapt to Greg Ives, his new crew chief. Of course, he made very, you know, Dale had not had a crew chief that he believed in since Tony Urie Sr. and Tony Urie Jr. And I'm not sure that Jr. ever really made him believe Tony Urie Jr., but he was at the command of Tony Urie Sr. as a young driver in the Cup Series. When he got Stevie Letard had been on the reins of Jeff Gordon, had been at the top of the box, worked with Chad Knaus. When Letard come over to Dale Jr., they made a relationship there that was imparable, and that's why you've seen the resurgence of Earnhardt the way that we did the last couple of years that they were together. 2016 injuries, of course, later on in the season, having to step away from the car, and we all know that last year, 2017, he was just riding around trying to make it through the year without getting hurt. It's been a couple of off years for the 88 team. It's definitely been a couple of off years. But I never had doubt in Greg Ives. And I think Greg Ives and Alex Bowman are getting used to each other. The performance seems to be there. Hendrick seems to be faster. Bowman should still be your Cinderella story as we rock into the chase of 12.
He still is. I believe that he's going to surprise everybody and make it to the round of four in Miami.
And with
that's
a Talladega, there could be a prime spot for him. Is that Mr. CJ Sports, Craig Moore?
I believe so.
I only have one thing to add to that. When you guys are talking about him not worried about living up to the hype and falling behind Dale Jr. The only thing that I could run through my head as you guys were saying that was what
what did he have? What does he have to prove to anybody? Well, there was a lot of names that were brought up on who was going to go into that 88. And I know there was one of us that was very persistent that it was going to be Alex Bowman. But we're not going to get into that conversation. But there was there was a lot of good names that was rumored to throw into that hat. And Mr. Hendricks picked Alex Bowman to go into that 88 car. I think right there let him know that he didn't really have anything to prove, that he proved what he needed to prove already in that 24 car, and knew that, I'm not going to say he's got job security, but when Mr. Hendrick picks you over all the available names that were rumored out there, you've kind of proven what you needed to prove, and now you just need to go out there and do what you've been doing and prove that, you know, you made the right selection. But I think that took a lot of pressure off when he was selected, and he was selected over a lot of those names that were thrown out there.
Well, I think a lot of that, CJ, has to do with, now think back to this. His original contract for the 88 was 36 races. 36 races. That was it. That was his contract. And then, so he had to go out and he had to perform.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't pull a Ricky Stenhouse, Danica Patrick, Bubba
Wallace.
All he
had to do was do what he'd been doing already. Just be consistent.
Right.
And
all he had to do was
be consistent.
That's
what he did in that 24 car. He was very consistent.
Right.
Took care of the car and consistency.
But he knew that he had a 36-race deal, and he had about 12 races. He had a third of the season to impress more to Mr. H. So what does he do? He runs consistent top 10s, top 15s, top 20s.
Mm-hmm.
That right there showed Mr. H and the entire staff at Hendrick Motorsports that makes the decisions, this kid is serious, and he's going to be all right. Now, let's offer him a contract extension. I don't know how long his contract extension is. I heard it was for an additional 2 years. I heard it was for an event. Then I heard it was an additional 3 years. But so he's now got a 2 year contract extension. What does he do? He runs out and runs the same style race. Slow and steady is going to get him further along in this chase than it's going to get anybody else. Matt Kenseth proved.
I think luck had a lot to do with this past race, but consistency is what has gotten him where he is. And we were talking about a guy who was riding 16th and now he's 12th. You know, one race was a drastic improvement over his last results. But guys, we've got to remember Bowman is coming back to tracks for the first time this year that he's only had 1 year or maybe two times to travel to these tracks. I'm excited to see if Alex Bowman can make his way into the final four and then show up at Phoenix, guys. I'm going down to the bookie and I'm betting the house on Bowman to win. We've seen him fast at Phoenix.
Not to contradict that, because I don't know, I can't remember, but how many races did he run in the 23 Dr. Pepper car? I realize that maybe it might be two or three, not one or two, but when talking about going back to these tracks, but I can't remember how many races or years he was over there in that Dr. Pepper car. And I'm correct. He did run in that 23 Dr. Pepper car for a while, didn't he?
Yes, that's correct. And he started with the Tommy Baldwin number 7 car with Nitro something as his sponsor. And then unfortunately after 1 year, he was released of his contract and bounced around with the BK Racing team before taking a substitute role for Dale Jr.
I mean, or for Gordon. But Jr. Splitting it with Gordon. But, I mean, I understand what you're saying, that, you know, he's returned to the track really for the first or second time in a car that matters and consistent. I was just trying to remember how many years that he's actually been running in the other cars to kind of get an idea how many tracks he has been already. And I know there's a world of difference from Tommy Baldwin, BK Racing, and then Hendrick Motorsports. But I just was just throwing that out there.
Well, you figure, now look at it this way. You figure that, okay, so he's running in lesser equipment, Tommy Baldwin and BK Racing. He's running slower. He's still running 180, 190 miles an hour on the big tracks. But he's not running the 185s, 190, 195s. So he has a lot more time to study the track.
Hey, you can look at it that way.
And those, and that equipment, he's not running up. He has more time to study.
I haven't had anybody break it down like that and look at it that way.
Well, you're welcome, Jason. I'm glad I can be assistance. See, I knew
I
had to
do that.
I mean,
he's running 5, 10 miles an hour slower than everybody else in the other equipment. He had, you know, more time to study these tracks and get to know them a little better.
Listen, sometimes you're not that far removed from the Mason-Dixon line. However, Chris is. So he's a little slower. So I had to break it down for him.
I just have never heard it said that way. That's some funny stuff there. I just ain't never heard it that way.
Well, I'm glad I could make you laugh. But I think, and I said it earlier, and I'll say it again, Alex Bowman is one of your final four picks. I think that Jimmy now has nothing to gain and everything to lose. And Chad kind of alluded to that last night or the night before on Race Hub. I don't remember if I caught it last night or not. But he kind of alluded to it, that now these guys that are not in, these four that are not in, can go after the wins a lot harder. They can run a lot harder because they have nothing to lose.
Right. Look, guys, I did a quick fact check on Alex Bowman, and I was actually wrong, Mr. CJ Sports. I'm glad we did a fact check. BK Racing was actually where he started his Cup career at. He raced a full season at BK, finished 35th in the season standings. He then, the next year, in 2015, raced for Tommy Baldwin Racing. He did miss a couple of races with Tommy Baldwin, including the Daytona 500. Well, that was the one that he missed, the Daytona 500. But he finished a solid 33rd in 2015 in a Tommy Baldwin Racing car. Then in 2016, of course, he subs in at New Hampshire, I believe it was, for the injured Dale Jr., and then played time in and out of the car throughout the rest of the year. So this will be his first, you know, time around in competitive equipment. But as for, like, Dover, he's had a total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's had 6 starts at Dover. So, you know, he definitely has some experience under his belt, and I think that's why Craig Moore was really solid on making him his Cinderella story.
Well, here's another thing. We're all going to Dover. What kind of a mood is Miles going to be in? We all know who Miles is.
Yeah, Monster Miles.
Miles the Monster. What kind of mood is he going to be in? Is it going to be a Turn 1 wreck fest like we saw at the Roval? Or is it going to be a Sunday drive?
We've seen over the past, Greg Moore, Dover is a tricky track. It's going to be slick. It's definitely seasonably warm for this time of year. You're a little bit closer to Delaware than we are. I expect a really good race, but there again, depending on the weather, will depend on the slickness of that track. And if it's hot, then we're going to probably be on the edge of our seats for this one as well, because, you know, that concrete, it's madness. There's a reason why there's a monster in front of that speedway.
Oh, absolutely. And I posted a tweet NASCAR put out earlier. And I mean, I posted it, I believe it was Tuesday. It's all the same face of Miles because his face doesn't change. But really, the weather changes. Like you said, the weather changes the track. If it's hot, it's going to be hot, slick, miserable concrete. If it's cool, the track is going to be super tight, and the cars aren't going to want to turn. And the elevation changes in the track, I believe it's something like 6 foot elevation or degree, foot, I believe it is, change going from the back straight stretch into turns 3 and 4. So, yeah. You know, and it's not a smooth left-hand turn. It's a pretty sharp.
This is a track for high-side hustlers, Craig Moore. And typically, you know, if you have a lot of grip, you're gonna hold that bottom. But if it's a slick track, your guys like Kyle Larson, they're going to be riding that top rail, and those guys are going to be faster. I mean, we've seen it before. You know, the shortest way around the track is normally the fastest, but you've got guys like Kyle Larson who can ride that rail and pick up time by just babying the throttle. It's going to be a good race. And now these guys that are in the 12, Craig, they can take a breather. They can work on being consistent again. But still, you know, time will run out fast. This is basically a two-race deal, and then they go into Talladega. Or nope. I'm sorry. They have Talladega next week, so guys are going to be worried about where they're standing before they go into Talladega.
Right. Talladega used to be the cutoff race for round two. It now got moved up to the middle, so they're going to leave what could be a wreck fest at Dover and go into what generally is a wreck fest at Talladega. So
I guess, you know, now's about a good time to talk about the rule package, Craig. And I, you know, I myself, I've studied it a little bit, but I'm still kind of, you know, hesitant. They're going to basically run the rule package that they ran at the All-Star race for most of the year. They're decreasing the power in the motors. They're going to run taper spacers at the plate tracks. We are getting rid of the restrictor plate in Cup Series. It'll be for the first time since 1987 that they show up to Talladega Motor Speedway in April for a race without a restrictor plate up underneath that hood. The taper spacer is going to cut the horsepower from about 770 down to 550. This will be implemented not only at the Talladega tracks along with the a heavy downforce package, but also at your mile-and-a-half speedways. Now, I heard Chad Knauss earlier on NASCAR Race Hub, and Chad said something that nobody wanted to hear. He said, quote, well, I better not quote him. He said, the best that I can say it, that no matter what, those guys, they were saying that, you know, this is going to be better for the bottom, for the underfunded teams. And Chad said, no matter what package they throw out there, as long as you have the resources and as long as you have the people, you'll always be able to find that competitive advantage over the smaller guys. So
what Chad was just saying was
everything that NASCAR says that this package is going to be, he's telling you right now, don't get your hopes up. We'll find a way to conquer all. That's coming from Hendrick Motorsports, guys. I mean, they're going to find a way to better their cars better than a team that doesn't have those types of funds.
Well, here's the thing. There's a white area in NASCAR. There's a black area in NASCAR. Nobody works in those areas. Every team works in the gray area. And what Chad said, and I'm not going to quote him either, but he said there's a gray area. We're going to figure out how to exploit that gray area. And you know for a fact, because you are not dumb, that the powers to be in Daytona were sitting at their big desks with their cigars in their mouth, not smoking, of course, because you can't smoke at a workplace, and saying, Chad Knauss, a 7-time championship crew chief, just said that we will find a way to skirt the rules. Let's tighten this shit up. So before we get to Daytona, I guarantee you they will make an amendment, or an addendum rather, to that rules package and you'll have Chad Knaus to thank for that. They're going to take
that slur. That's what engineers get paid for, Craig. It is racing. If you're not cheating, you ain't trying. I seen an interesting post the other day that said, do cheaters win or does winning – ah, crap, I can't even remember how it was said. But anyway, it was – you know, that's racing, guys. They're always going to find that gray area. They're always going to try to push the limits. But, you know, I'm a proponent of decreasing the horsepower because when you slow these cars down, it becomes more of the driver and – their capabilities of working their way through traffic. And, you know, to me, that's there's nothing better at a short track than watching your driver get sent to the back. Of course, you're madder than a ant when your driver gets put to the back. But if he's a good driver, guess what? He finds his way to the front. And that's what we're going to be able to see. You know, we're going to be able to see these guys put in predicaments, but the Wheelmans will prevail and the championship caliber teams will prevail. What this does is it gives, you know, it really helps out the welfare cars versus the underfunded cars. And yes, there's a middle class and a poor class society, even in NASCAR. There's the rich, there's the middle class, and then there's the poor. This will actually help out the poor cars a lot more because they can compete closer to the middle class cars. But as for the rich, they're going to just keep getting richer, buddy. I mean, it's Trump Nation, baby.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I look forward to see what happens in January, February for Speed Week. But I'm telling you, before the end of the season, based on what Canal said, NASCAR is going to make an addendum to their rules package. Another thing, they're taking that spoiler and they're raising it, I believe it's at 3.75 inches now. They're raising it to 8 inches.
Beautiful. A lot of downforce in these cars. They'll be able to drive them.
Right. You're going to have somebody behind the wheel of that car that can handle that downforce.
Craig, what that's going to create, what that 8-inch spoiler on the back of that car is going to create is when you come off of that corner and you track down that dude in front of you, what you're going to be able to do is you're going to be able to build up the momentum in the rear of the car to when you set that thing down on the bottom, you're going to be able to pass him because you are getting traction from the rear of your wheels. That 8-inch spoiler is going to make that race car sit on that pavement, and he's going to be able to gut his way around somebody who he may be a half a mile an hour faster than, where typically – when you see in this rule package that we have today, typically what you see is a faster car work their way through the field, but the moment they get up to the leader, there's that clean air in front of them. They get dirty air, and they just don't have what it takes to get around that race car. A little bit more grip in the back, a little bit bigger spoiler. That car is going to be able to step out on its own, and he's going to be able to muscle his way past the first-place car, which is something that we have not been able to enjoy in racing in a long time. Is consistent lead changes. Most of the time in this type of racing that we've had for the last few years, it's a follow the leader and they try to win on a pit strategy or so many different pit strategies now. You know, it used to be you had one or two strategies. At the Roval, I could have counted four pit strategies at least that were in go and drivers doing different pit cycles, added with the stages and you know, the –
she got that.
With the stages and, of course, a road course where they don't have as many laps to go, they can make less frequent stops. It put on, you know, for several different strategies, including probably the reason why Keselowski drove right ahead on into that corner there on the restart in turn one. Definitely, he had been pushing 10 laps. He had 10 more laps on his tires and 10 less laps of fuel than the rest of the field. So we'll see pit strategies and all that way out, Craig Moore. With this rule change, what we're going to see is we're going to see more side-by-side racing. We're going to see the cars bunched up. We will not be able to tell by the eye that these cars are going about 10 to 15 miles an hour slower.
No, we won't be. But I think it's going to make for nicer racing. I think, like you said, it's going to allow passing. Nobody wants to sit and watch follow the leader racing.
No, we want to see
draft
passing.
On the highway.
We want to see draft passing. We want to see that third car get a chance. Used to be at these play tracks, the best place on the racetrack was that third place car. Why? Because the two in front of you was sitting ducks, and if you got the train behind you, they were going to push you to the front. That's the type of racing. They're basically trying to bring pack racing to the 1.5 mile speedways. And in order to do that, what do you have to do, Craig Moore?
You have to slow them down.
You got to slow them down. And that's what we're going to get. And whether this works or not, I commend NASCAR for the guts to go out and try to make a change and to try to bring, you know, once again, me and CJ Sports have talked about this. NASCAR works to please their fans. We bitch and gripe and act like they don't listen to us. Man, we have changed the sport that we watch on TV for the last 10 years because NASCAR has done nothing but listen to the fans.
I agree 100%. I think fans are too quick to complain and not see the bigger picture. They complain and want these changes, and then NASCAR makes these changes, and before you see how it benefits the sport and benefits the racing, you complain about it. I mean, I always use this as an example. Yes, the COT was probably one of the worst cars to ever have to watch, but if they wouldn't have went to the COT, we wouldn't end up with what we have today in the product. You know, it might take NASCAR sometimes one or two times to get it right, but they're consistently trying to give the fans what they want. And it blows my mind when you're on social media, NASCAR makes a change, and the first thing you hear is all these NASCAR fans get on there and complain and gripe, and, oh, NASCAR changing this again. And NASCAR... It wasn't last year you were complaining that you wanted these changes, and so NASCAR listens to you, and it's probably one of the only sports that consistently tries to do and give the fans what they want, and you complain about it. I don't get it, but I agree. They try. They, you know, like I said, it might take them a time or two. You know, like I said, COT is one of the biggest examples for me. Yeah, that was horrible to watch. That was one of the worst cars, but we weren't involved into the products and the cars we have today. So, you know, it is what it is.
CJ Sports, you go back 2 years ago, right? Remember at the beginning of the 2017 race season, we started the show in January. We talked about the stage points, and we talked about how exciting it was to add this new idea and how it was going to change the landscape. And, of course, I remember me and you were, you know, in a similar debate, where we were actually talking about the gains of these points and that somebody would realize that these points are crucial and they would basically run away with the field. Who was that, Mr. CJ Sports? Who did exactly what we predicted? Martin Truex Jr.'s team. They went out and they kicked butt. They stole as many stage points as they could because half of the field didn't take serious of what these stage points meant. You still have fans today that gripe and complain because of stage points. But you look at the race finish at the Roval and you tell me that stage points don't make sense. If you think that it hasn't added an extra bit of drama, then you're a Jimmy Johnson fan and you just think, you know, the stage points kept you out of the chase. Because basically, had he got one stage point, one playoff point, one stage win, Jimmy Johnson would be in the chase. Out of 26 races, he was never able to accomplish that. That's why he's sitting at the house. That's how important those stage wins and those stage points and these playoff points are in the big picture of things. If you can still complain about stage points, you probably are not a real race fan because I think, and this is my opinion, I think they've added a great addition to the excitement level and for something to give us, I mean, gives us something to talk about week in, week out.
Listen, I have figured out something that maybe nobody else has. Whether it's baseball, football, basketball, soccer, hockey, or NASCAR, whenever the governing, whenever we, the fans, complain and say we want something, we don't really want it. We just want a bitch to see if they're listening. And then when they listen, we're like, oh, they listened to us. But we didn't really want that. We just wanted to see if they listened. So
but they're going with this rule package, Craig Moore, because we liked it at the All-Star race. NASCAR tried it. They got a good review from the fans. Now they're implementing it into policy. And it's because we, the fans, had such great reviews about this package. Now we have to race this package all next year. And to be honest with you, Craig, it's right at the same time where I think racing is getting better. So we're going to get a whole new package and be up in the air again. I think the racers have done well with this package at the end, you know, here at the end. It's been a lot of race here. Races have been a lot more enjoyable. But there again, out the window that goes, and in comes this new policy, and in comes these new rules. We, the fans, this is what we asked for. Go ahead.
Here's what I liken it to. You meet a girl for the first time. You go out on a date. She's everything you think you want. You're dating for a while, and then
football season starts, and you find out she's an Auburn fan.
Go ahead.
You find out that you're a New York Giants fan, and she's a Dallas Cowboys fan. Or you're a New York Yankees fan, and she's a Boston Red Sox fan.
No.
Or she has gas for the first time. It's everything that we wanted, but we asked NASCAR to do it, but we didn't. As I said, we didn't think they'd do it. Now that they did it, you said it. It's not a one race deal like it was this year, race fans. It's 36 races. All right, 33 because you got two short tracks in there.
Right.
33 races, fans. You wanted it. You got it. Don't complain about it when your guy doesn't do so well.
But wait, Craig, and before we act like we're bashing it, I want to tell you guys that Xfinity has practiced this package more than any other series. And I'll be very honest with you, Craig. The Xfinity races over the last 2 years, be it the changes with the drivers, be it the exclusion of Cup drivers, we have seen some awesome racing in the Xfinity series as they've developed this package that's now going to be passed on to the Cup cars. If we can get the same results in Cup that we have gotten in the Xfinity series, and may I add that Ross Chastain made this year's chase in a number 4 underfunded J.D. Davis machine, that should tell you the testament of how this rule package benefits those at the lower end of financial sterns.
I agree. I think that, and Ross got in, if I'm not mistaken, he got in with a car that he wasn't normally going to drive. Am I correct?
Ross was in the, he was going to make the Xfinity Chase without the win in the 42 machine. But that was the J.D. Davis number 4 watermelon car that he was racing this year that basically put together enough consistent finishes to qualify for the chase. So, you know, that was, like I said, an underfunded team that, you know, not every race was run on that rule package, but, of course, they've been in composite bodies already. You know, they've basically – anything that NASCAR's done at the Cup level, they've already tried in the Xfinity Series. That's what I like about the Xfinity Series. It's definitely a research and development place. And like I said, when you look at Pocono, when you look at Indianapolis, you look at these racetracks that they ran that package with in the Xfinity cars, the racing was hands down top grade. It was awesome side-by-side racing. And I expect that to be the same case coming up. What we miss is the 90s where a 20th place car would sometimes be in the top five given certain racetracks. We will hopefully be at that pinnacle again, because basically back in the old day, it wasn't, you know, in the 90s, your top 20 cars were always within, you know, several seconds of each other. It was a lot tighter racing during that time. Of course, we can go back to the 80s where they were lapping everybody out on the racetrack. So we've seen different rule packages. We've watched the evolution of NASCAR. I think this is going to benefit those lower-tier cars. But like Jimmy said, Craig, you know, in the end, those with resources, those with funding, those with a lot of extra hands on board, they're always going to find a way to become faster. And that's the testament of racing. There's nothing we can do about that. But now we are running into the 8 o'clock, well, the third segment of the show here tonight. We want to thank you fans for listening. Of course, it's Race Chat Live. We are moving to Monday night. This Monday, we're really looking forward to that. Guys, what else do y'all have on board for us?
Well, let's pick winners. Oh, before I forget, Super Dirt Week is happening up in Oswego, New York this weekend. That is a collection of the Northeast's best drivers, kind of like your race that you have down there in Hattiesburg in September,
wow.
August, September.
Yeah.
We have it up here in October, and it used to be at the fairgrounds in Syracuse, but they've done ripped that track up.
Right.
And it is now in Oswego, which is right next to Lake Ontario. And they're running Super Dirt Week up there this weekend. So hopefully, with any luck, we'll be able to get the winner, if he's a local guy for us, we'll be able to get the winner on Monday night, especially if it's Mr. Dewey Freeze and Mr. Freeze. So, listen, I think the Truck Series is running this weekend. I'm not 100% certain, but I'm in my office in the truck. But if the Truck Series is running, I'm going to give it to Stewie, because if it's hot and slick, cold and mean, it doesn't matter. Stewie's going to grab his first W. In the Xfinity Series, oh, I'm going to go with Cole Custer. No, I take that back. I'm going to go with Daniel Hemric, who's going to be the new pilot of the number 31 for Richard Childers Racing. And then the Cup Series, I'm going to go with Double J.
Who?
Jimmy Johnson.
Oh.
Double J, Jimmy Johnson.
You
know
think Jimmy's going to step it up?
You know why? Because he ain't got nothing to prove.
Yeah.
And Chad Knaus, as I said it in the first hour, this gives the teams that did not make it a chance to experiment. I'll let you talk now because my voice is tired.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm still doing a look up here on what events we have. Of course, it's coming up now. K&M Pro Series East is racing. The Xfinity Series is racing. And the Cup Series is racing. I'll have to check the truck schedule and see if they're racing somewhere else. They may be somewhere else, but if not, then I think they'll show up again back at the track next week at Talladega. But with the Dover Xfinity race, you know, Allgaier has had an awesome year, and I really think that he's zoning in on a championship. It's going to be a tight battle between him and Christopher Bell as the season closes out. But I've got my money on that number 7. I really think Allgaier's proven that he's an unbelievable talent, and if he's not recognized in a cup car by the 2020 season, I think that there's several people that are kidding themselves in the front office, some of these major cup teams. But in the cup side, you know, I haven't given it much thought. We're at Dover. man, I'm gonna ride with Alex Bowman this week. I don't mean to take somebody else's pick. I think that this really lit a fire under him, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he's got for this week. And I think that Alex Bowman, we could see a different racer, one that is more comfortable. Of course, throughout this whole year, it's been a survival. Let's prove what I can do. Now he has a moment to breathe, a moment to reset. He's in the round of 12. Alex Bowman, I think, is on fire. You know, he's going to have to beat Harvick. He's going to have to beat Keselowski. He's going to have to beat a lot of guys, Kyle Larson as well. But Alex Bowman, Cinderella pick for you or not, I think that this could be his race here, and it could also put him in a better chance to be at the Final Four. I think there was one last topic that we were supposed to talk about before we get to – well, Mr. CJ Sports, do you have any picks for this weekend?
Okay. My phone has cut or lost reception. I don't know if this was discussed or not, but the trucks are not running this weekend. That'll run again until the 13th. I don't know if I missed that or not. Xfinity Series, going with Christopher Bell, and with the Cup Series, the guy I think is going to win the championship, win it all, I'm going with Kyle Busch.
Wow. That's a heavy pick there, too. I would figure that Vegas is probably agreeing with what Mr. CJ Sports said there. I'll go ahead and check that out real quick. NASCAR Vegas. But yeah, okay, so the last topic that I think that we forgot to talk about is Daniel Suarez. Look, I read an article from ESPN, and there is a gentleman by the name of Carlos Slim. Does anybody on this board know who Carlos Slim is?
No clue.
He is the seventh richest man in the world. He is Daniel Suarez's financial backer. If there was ever a time and a place where you took a chance on somebody, you would take a chance on somebody that has billions of dollars to help fund that. If I believe that Daniel Suarez may buy him a ride at the 41. But I also told you guys last week and a couple weeks before, I think Daniel Suarez is the real deal. And to know that he has the backing of the seventh most richest person in the world, I could see that a pretty good fit over there at Stuart Haas. And I believe that Suarez would do well at Stuart Haas Racing. And even though they're not for sure if the deal is going to go through, being that, Carlos Slim is his backer, man, I would almost have to bet that Daniel Suarez will wind up in the 41, and we will get to see the continued progression of a Suarez behind the wheel. I'm really excited about this kid, and I knew that he had a good backer. I knew that there was somebody that I remember bringing it to some attention a couple of years ago as well, Mr. CJ Sports, that there was somebody behind Suarez that could have possibly been interested in purchasing Joe Gibbs Racing. Here's what you have at Stuart Haas. You sign that kid, and he's in your stable. Carlos Slim is writing checks to you. But when you have somebody like Carlos Slim who is willing to back a driver, I would be too scared to let him go somewhere else, guys, because basically this man is rich enough. We don't have very many billionaires, and when you have a billionaire in NASCAR, you're getting somewhere because this guy can write a check for anything. If Suarez does not wind up at Stuart Haas, then I look for Mr. Slim to find Suarez a ride, even if it means buying his own team. This is something that I believe is being hushed because, of course, when you have somebody like that that's influencing another driver, it definitely opens the eyes up and it makes people start to go into their calculators. Can we afford, if this is how much is being offered, can we afford to field this car? I see the deal coming through, and for myself, I'm excited that somebody like Suarez has the notoriety and has the financial backing of somebody that's of this caliber. I think that it will increase the chances of him finding a top-notch ride. But there again, that's hypocritical when I've been a proponent of it's tough to see these kids that have no experience whatsoever buying their way into race cars. So I can see it, you know, on both sides. But do you guys have any thoughts on the seventh richest man in the world basically being the financial bidder for Daniel Suarez?
Well, I think it's smart on Suarez's part to have somebody with that kind of money backing him. That shows that someone believes in him. If
right.
I was that guy, I probably would have purchased him by now and said, Daniel, you have a lifetime contract or until you wreck $30 million worth of race cars, whichever comes first.
Carlos Slim is obviously a racing fan, guys, and he is a telecommunication mogul. He built his... You know, built his. He's a self-made man. He invested a lot into tech corporations when they were worth absolutely nothing. And in the 80s, they started to boom. He was able to basically multiply his earnings and build his portfolio to what it is today. Like you said, I think that it does probably put a lot on the shoulders of Suarez. At the same time, you know, what this sport you have to have is a good financial backer. And I think with his financial backer, he kind of sets himself away from all the rest. There shouldn't be any question. And what I like about this the most, and before I get off point here, Carlos Slim is obviously a racing fan, and he wants to see somebody from his home country of Mexico to succeed. That in itself is going to be good for NASCAR.
I think that somebody from – it's good for Mexico, it's good for NASCAR, because it shows a true diversity, which NASCAR is looking for.
Right.
They're looking for something to attract bigger sponsors, if you
mm-hmm.
will, like people from F1, the IndyCar racing series and things like that. Go ahead, Jason.
Well, first of all, I don't know where Jason is. The Formula One, a one-year contract for a Formula One race team costs about $125 million for 1 year of advertisement sponsorship for a Formula One team. Cost that sponsor $125 million. Now, Formula One is a logistic nightmare because you travel all over the globe to race. So you can only imagine what it costs to move these race cars to where they have to go to the next place. And of course, that's why the sponsorship for Formula One cars is a lot more than what it is for NASCAR. But like you said, when you start bringing in these moguls, from these other countries, some of the richest people in their native countries, you're adding to the balloon effect of NASCAR, plus you're bringing in a fan base. And I know that there's a lot of fans in Mexico that have watched Suarez roll through the race. And Stuart Haas will get a lot of attention. I think this is a better deal than the Danica for sure. And I, like I said, I think the Suarez would actually fit in there at Stuart Haas Racing. CJ, do you have any comments to that?
Yeah, my only comment I'm sitting here thinking is it's got to be a great feeling to know that someone with that kind of money and really that kind of power has that kind of confidence in you that they're willing to be a financial backing, and that's got to be a great feeling. Like, I couldn't imagine someone with that kind of pull, power, and money that they would have that much confidence in anything I do, that I'm not saying it's a secure thing, but you know, as long as you keep doing what you're doing to perform, that you're going to have an opportunity because someone has that much confidence in you.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a great,
you know, he's already sponsored this kid. He's already elevated him to where he is. And obviously the contract with Joe Gibbs was already a done deal, and they never expected Suarez to be put out of a ride. So, you know, basically Slim's now at the table saying, hey, this is what I can spend, and they're negotiating with whether or not that's going to be enough to get into a ride at Stuart Haas. But, you know, any rich man, he's only going to put down a little bit to see how things are before he sets down the whole truckload. Like you said, Mr. CJ Sports, I see it as a win-win for Suarez.
Oh, absolutely. He's going to get a ride, and he's going to have financial backing. You know, two things that he's going to want the most.
And he has stock car experience, guys. You know, we talked about this before. Suarez started when he was 15 years old. He's driven a stock car for the last 5 or 6 seasons. All of his talent is in stock car racing. It's not an open wheel. All right, guys. Well, that looks like about the time to sum things up. Of course, I'll have to ride and die on my pick of Alex Bowman for this weekend's Dover race. Remember, race fans, be back with us on Monday. Monday is going to be our new time slot. We're going to start at the same time hour. What's that, Mr. Greg Moore?
I am excited for Monday. I'm excited. Usually I don't like change, and I'd be madder than a midget trying to reach a urinal. But I am excited for change. I'm excited for a new – you didn't catch that, didn't you? I heard that over the weekend, and I just started laughing. I'm excited for a new night. I'm excited to see what happens. I will tell you that I have nothing on the schedule this weekend for myself or Dana or More Two Music. Well, I shouldn't say for us, because we're going to go listen to Wrestling Federation, quote-unquote, gamer Jim Duggan in his hometown of Glens Falls, New York, at a comedy show. So that is what we are doing Saturday night.
That's awesome. Also, to recap real quick, Craig, I forgot to mention this. Daniel Hamrick is the one going into the 31 car. He will replace Ryan Newman, who is going to Roush Fenway Racing. I checked up the Vegas stats real quick before we go, guys. Kevin Harvick leads the pack for Vegas, a 5-2 odd. Kyle Busch is a 3-1 odd. Martin Truex Jr. is a 4-1 odd. Kyle Larson has made his way into the Big Four by Vegas standards. Kyle Larson is a 7-1. 10-1 is Keselowski. A 12-1 is Elliott. And then you get off into the 14-1s. It's very interesting. Alex Bowman is a 50-1 favorite. As a matter of fact, Jimmy Johnson is a 20-1 favorite. So going out and picking Alex Bowman, Vegas would basically say I was crazy. So I like those kind of odds, especially I've been on a hot hand there toward the end of the season. As for the Xfinity race, Christopher Bell is 11-4 odd, and Justin Allgaier is a 7-2 odd. Cole Custer is a 9-2 odd. Elliot Sadler is a 7-1, and also at the 7-1 is a Ryan Preece. So those guys are Vegas's favorites. As of right now, Vegas has Kyle Busch, and I believe this has changed. Kyle Busch is the new favorite for the championship, with Kevin Harvick second at 11-4 odd, and Martin Truex Jr. as a third favorite at a 3-1 odd, Brad Keselowski as a fourth favorite at 6-1 odd. The odds for Alex Bowman winning the championship is 100-1. Guys, go make your bets now. Put it on Alex Bowman. I'm telling you guys, it reminds me of 2002.
Craig Moore said so.
Yeah, Craig Moore said so. There you go. Put it all on Craig. We're just 5 minutes out from our fourth segment. Race fans, thank you guys for listening in. I hope that we've covered a lot of ground this evening. I do want to remind you once again, we will be on air Monday night. If we need to do a replay of the show on Thursday night, we'll look into that as we try to fill up the gaps and work the new schedule out now that we've had a special team member of ours walk away and take kind of an early retirement due to health issues. Mike Perricone, if you're listening tonight, man, we're still thinking about your stats. Wish you were on the other side of the glass there. Race fans, go out and support your local dirt tracks. Go out and support your local tracks. It's near about the end of the season. There's a lot of big shows all across America before the snow falls. This is it, man. This is the final stretch, is what they would say in baseball. That's the seventh inning stretch, the final stretch. I'm sorry. That would be the seventh inning stretch that they say in baseball. But anyway, this is the final stretch here, and we're getting ready to close out the 2018 race season. And we'll be closing out our season as well the week before Thanksgiving here on Race Chat Live and in the 110 Nation Sports. I want to thank all of the people that are affiliated with us, of course. Remember Race Know How. They've got a new way to subscribe for their monthly subscriptions. You don't no longer have to use PayPal. You can actually set up your own credit card account and pay it that way as well. So they were really excited. Jonathan Masters hit me up here just before the show and wanted me to put it out there that they were they have made some changes to the website, and they're going out to make a new video this week at an engine shop, and I'd love to reveal that, but I'm not going to. So be looking forward to what coming up next on the Race Know How page. Is there anything to close with, guys? Mr. CJ Sports, you got anything to add to it?
Yeah, I want to send out thoughts and prayers to Dylan Martin. For those that don't know, Dylan Martin started coming on the show, the 110 Nation show, 3 or 4 years ago. First interview, I thought I had like 30 minutes worth of questions panned out for him. And he was young, I want to say 17 years old, 16, 17, something like that. And was new to being interviewed and being on the radio, and every answer he gave was a one-worded answer. It don't matter what I asked. It was a very short answer. And 5 minutes into the interview, I've gone through all my questions, and I was still kind of new to all this, and I was just, oh my God, we're having a bunch of dead air time. Over the years, we've had an opportunity to have him on the network many times, to where 30 minutes wasn't even enough time, no more. And his brother, he played college football, and he switched over to be a race car driver as well. And as a matter of fact, Brandon, he's probably the only person I've ever had on the show that had me crying, stopping so hard. A very entertaining. He's always got great stories to tell. I had an opportunity to meet with them when I went to Homestead for the race. I helped collect soda tabs for the Shriners with Dylan. Last time I was in Florida, I was actually supposed to go watch Brandon race, and Dylan was going to crew chief, but the race got canceled. Sunday night, car pulled out in front of him, and he got in a real bad motorcycle wreck. I know that I was messaged Sunday night, but I was already asleep. Monday morning, he looked like he was asleep, then slipped into a coma, and then Tuesday he came out of it, and looks like he's been improving ever since. His family, his former PR, we've had her on the show. She's also a driver. Are very close and personal friends. They're not just guests of the show. I talk to his parents as well quite regularly. I just want to send thoughts and prayers out to Dylan Martin, and hopefully he's able to recover soon. And I don't know if being behind the wheel is an option at this point anymore from the severity of the wreck, but even not, just knowing that he's going to be able to recover and still be able to do things and be alive and everything else is a great feeling. And I can't wait to have the opportunity to meet up with them again and talk to both of them. And I just want to make sure that our thoughts and prayers went out to them.
Uh-oh. Yeah, definitely our thoughts and prayers are with Dylan and his family as they go through this tough time. And Craig, of course, our condolences to your family. To your friends as well, just some terrible news that you received the other day You know, guys, always remember that life is short and very precious, and be kind to one another. If I can give any advice to anybody, it's be kind to one another. And you never know when the last time you're going to talk to them. But once again, we want to thank you guys for listening to the show here tonight, Race Chat Live, another great episode. We'll be back on Monday night. Really looking forward to that. New bat time, new bat place. Same bat place, new bat time, or new bat day anyway. Hopefully I won't roll over my words so much on Monday. It's my daughter, as a matter of fact, a little peek into Chris's life. My daughter's moving across the street, coming back home after 3 years. And she's renting the house across the street from us. And so we're really looking forward to having her back and into the fold and get to see this grandbaby a little bit more. So exciting times here, and hopefully it's exciting times for y'all as well. But remember, guys, we'll be back on Monday night. Thank y'all for listening to Race Chat Live. And tune in with us and follow the page, 110 Nation Sports, and the Race Chat Live page. Thank y'all, and good night.
Good night, everybody.